So happy to see everybody, and for the second day of the Empathic Communication Seminar. And first we're going to chant a little bit. Oh, one thing I want to mention before, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you all for inviting me. And one devotee told me this morning, very nice, this is better than Sadhu Sangha. You know, there's a Sadhu Sangha program going on in North Carolina. I came here from North Carolina because I wanted to be here with all of you. So the devotee said, this is much better than Sadhu Sangha. Haribol. Some transcendental competition there. So before starting, we're going to chant, and as we did yesterday, we want to chant with attention to the meaning of what we're chanting. Today we're going to chant something different, Prabhupada's Pranam Mantra, and then the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, and then the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And as we chant these different mantras, we're going to think of the meaning of the different mantras. For example, Prabhupada's Pranam Mantras, we offer respects to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, so dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. You can visualize that, or picture it, or imagine it, or whatever your frame of consciousness is. And then, Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sunyabadi Paschacha Dejatarni, which means I offer my respects unto the servant of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is carrying out the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Western world, and the Western world is full of voidism and impersonalism. Nirvishesha Shunyavada. Everybody knows what voidism is? No. Impersonalism. Okay. Voidism means that nothing has any meaning, nothing is real, or basically everything in this material world is just a bunch of atoms that are, let us say, floating around, or subatomic particles, or dark energy that's floating around, or dark matter that's floating around, or whatever it is, it's all by chance. And shunyavada, nirvishesha, means there's no distinction, there's no variety in the absolute. Everything is one. I am you, you are me, and we're all God. How's that? If I was God, I probably wouldn't be here. I'd be standing on the altar. So Prabhupada has come to bring the real understanding of spiritual life to the Western world, actually to the whole world, which is actually influenced by impersonalism and voidism. And actually impersonalism and voidism came from India. A lot of things come from India that are not so great. Some things are good. Most of you from India, that's good. One other thing that came from India that's not so good is a herbal medicine that most people take in America. Most people smoke. That's, Prabhupada said, that's an import from India. So it's not that just because something comes from India we should accept it. Otherwise we'd all be taking marijuana. So nirvishesha shunyavadi paschacha dejatarni. He's come to the Western world, and that's where we are right now. And Prabhupada came to the Western world, and he brought the Western devotees back to India as dancing white elephants, and that way India became Krishna conscious. Okay. And then Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasiti Gaur Bhaktivinoda. What I like to do when I chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra is I'd like to think of each individual member of the Panchatattva when I'm chanting it. In other words, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, that's Lord Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, who is Lord Nityananda, Balaram Harilinitai, Advaita, who is Sadashiva, Mahavishnu, and he was the one who prayed for Lord Chaitanya's advent, Gadadhar, who is Srimati Radharani, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, and Srivas, who is Narada Muni, representing the Jiva soul. So I can picture all these different personalities. You can picture the deities in Sridham Mayapur, the Panchatattva deities. Anybody here been to Sridham Mayapur? Good, good, good. So Panchatattva, beautiful Panchatattva deities that are going to be installed in the temple, I think 2024, if we're lucky. So, and then of course, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I think everybody knows that. But the interesting thing about the words Hare and Krishna and Ram are that they're all in the sense of the, they're in the vocative sense. That means they're crying out. You're calling, oh, Radharani. Oh, Krishna. Oh, Ram. Actually, the word Ram means Lord Ram. It also means Balaram, also means Radharaman. Three different things. So, when I chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, I take it as I'm crying out, as Prabhupada said, one should chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra crying out like a child for the mother. Talking about a little child. A bigger child that tries to get away from the mother. We deal with that all the time. But a little child... I used to pray to Krishna that my mother would go on a vacation for a long time. So that was more fun, because then I could go into the room in the house that I wasn't allowed to go into and jump on all the couch and everything like that and have fun. So, but a little child cries out for the mother, Ma, Ma. So Prabhupada said we should cry out for Krishna in the same way. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says a similar thing in the Shikshashtika. Ainanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam bishame bhavam buro kripaya tarapada pankaja. Stitta duli sadrasam pachinti. O son of Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant, but I'm suffering in the material world. Is anyone here not suffering in this world? Somewhat. You know, not right now, hopefully. But, but from time to time. Does anyone else, anyone here not experience the threefold miseries? Miseries from other living entities, miseries from the material nature in general, you got it? Miseries from the body and mind, and miseries from other devotees. Oh, that's the fourth one. So, sorry about that. So, but ariyatmik, ariyat, daivak, aribodik, aridaibodiak. So, anyway, sorry about that. So, we're all experiencing these myths, so we cry out for Krishna, save me, I'm suffering in this material world, fix me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. So, anyway, with that brief introduction, we're going to chant Prabhupada's Pranam, the Panchatattva, and the Hare Krishna Mahamantra for a few minutes, okay? Maybe I'll sit for this one. So... Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Samin Hiti Namane. Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavati Paschacha Desacharine. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasadehi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Shiva Sarehi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jaya Prabhu Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jai Gaur Premananda Haribol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nice to see everyone here. So I just want to read a few quotes, as we always do in the beginning of this seminar. And of course these quotes deal, some of them from Srila Prabhupada, they deal with the necessity of meeting our needs, as we talked about in the first session, the first two sessions, of meeting our needs, basic needs. Remember, we have basic human, physical needs, psychological needs, social needs, in order for us to be stable in Krishna consciousness. And especially we want to talk about the need for autonomy, or to be independently thoughtful. So Srila Prabhupada brings that out in several quotes that I'm going to read. This is from a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to Karanda Prabhu in Bombay. The Krishna consciousness movement is for training men to be independently thoughtful and competent in all departments of knowledge and action, not for making a bureaucracy. Once there is bureaucracy, the whole thing, it will be spoiled. There must always be individual striving and work and responsibility, competitive spirit, not that one shall dominate and distribute benefits to the others, and they do nothing but beg from you and you provide. Pretty powerful. And then a quote is from the Bhagavad Gita, and this is from the fourth chapter, text 34 in the purport. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. And then, another quote from the Bhagavad Gita class that Srila Prabhupada gave. So Bhagavad Gita gives you full information so that you can accept God with your reason, with your argument, with your knowledge. It is not blind following. Krishna consciousness is not a sentiment. It is backed by knowledge and practical knowledge. Vijnanam jnana vijnana sahitam. So without vijnana sahitam, and the process is to understand this knowledge, is to be a surrendered soul. Therefore, we disciple. Disciple means one who accepts the discipline. Without accepting discipline, we cannot make any progress. It is not possible. Any field of knowledge, any field of activities, if you want to be aware scientifically and factually, you should accept the controlling principle. And then one final quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that illustrates pretty much the same point. This is from the Bhakti Loka of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there is a need for some arrangements in order to attain a favorable condition in these bodies. First, in order to maintain the gross body, there is a need to accumulate a house, household items, grains, and drinks. Non-alcoholic, of course. For the prosperity of the subtle body, one needs proper knowledge and proper occupation. Varnashram. In order to make the bodies completely favorable for devotional service, there is a need to situate them above the modes of nature. Due to the results of fruitive activities from time immemorial, whatever nature and desires a living entity develops is certainly a mixture of goodness, passion, and ignorance. By first enriching the mode of goodness, one should diminish and defeat passion and ignorance and make goodness prominent. When the mode of goodness is completely under the control of devotional service, then it becomes nirguna. By following this gradual process, one's body, mind, and environment become fit for devotional service. Let me unpack that a little bit. So the mode of goodness means to have some mature discrimination based on Shastra. And that mature discrimination based on Shastra enables us to discriminate in our activities and ascertain what is favorable and what is not favorable for Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya states, and this is brought out by Prabhupada in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, very, very specifically. He states the six principles of surrender. First one, who knows the first one? I'm going to ask all of you, we're going to be more interactive, it's not just me teaching you. What's the first principle of surrender? What? Accepting what's favorable. What's the second principle? Very good. Third principle. Not from the same person. Wow. If we're going to surrender, does everyone want to surrender? No. So we should learn these six principles. Next one is to understand the Lord is always maintaining one. Next one, the Lord is always protecting one. Maintaining, protecting. What's the next one? This is the hardest for me. Always be what? Meek and humble. And the last one is to have no separate interest other than the interest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's very important. I think devotees can write this down. It's really not directly connected with the subject matter of this seminar, but it's important. So, in the mode of goodness, the reason I'm connecting this is the mode of goodness, we see what's favorable for developing devotional service. And what's favorable for devotional service is, connecting to the seminar, is being aware of our needs so we can be stable and progress at a steady pace in devotional service. Rather than being like a shooting star. A shooting star flames out after some time. So we should understand our needs. So yesterday, to just review a little bit of the subject matter, we talked about the four blocks of communication. Does anyone remember the four blocks of two communication? The four D's of discommunication. Diagnosis. Can someone explain what diagnosis? Raise your hand if you can explain what diagnosis is. Yes, sir. Label someone with a what? Static instead of ecstatic. You put ecstatic or static. To label someone with a static designation, or to label yourself. Give me an example. Anyone can give me an example? How we label someone? Give me a label for someone else. Pure devotee. Yeah, that's good. You're lazy. You're mudha. How would you label yourself? No. Anyway, how would you, let's say, if you weren't yourself, how would you label yourself? But let's say you do something, you're driving your car and you get a ticket, you know, the police pull up to you, and you get a ticket because you're speeding. What would you say to yourself at that point? Yeah, I'm an idiot. I'm stupid. So that's a label, and it disconnects you from yourself. I mean, the best thing to do is apologize to the police. But, and if it's in India, it's no problem, you just give them a bribe. So that's called a diagnosis. And then the second D that we talked about was what? Denial of responsibility. Give me an example. Can someone raise their hand and give me an example? Yes. It was not your fault. Why wasn't it your fault? Everyone was going at that speed. Yeah, that's good. Everyone was going at speed. Or, you know, my husband told me to drive faster. So, let me ask you a question. Would the police give your husband a ticket then? No. You're responsible. So that's denial of responsibility. What's the next one?
Demand.
Give me an example of a demand. Someone? Yeah, but why don't you phrase it? Just say it as a demand. What's that? We need microphones circulating around here. I'm demanding it.
Asking something forcibly to do without giving any reason.
Yeah, it's more than that. It's like, let me explain again. Demand is something that if they don't do it, they're going to get a reaction from us. And sometimes we make demands on ourselves too, without being aware of our needs. For example, we may have pushed ourselves to sleep too little, and then we get sick. So there's always a reaction for that. Now, there are times when you can make a demand. What happened here? There are times when you can make a demand and it doesn't interfere with communication. What would those times be?
Emergency.
Let's say a little kid is crossing the street or going across the street and you just grab him. That's all right, because you really wouldn't be able to communicate if he got hit by a car. So, yeah. All right, and what's the fourth D of deserve? And who can give me an example of deserve? Nobody. Interesting.
Like when a child does something, mistake, the parent says, okay, you need to take the punishment. You deserve.
You deserve to suffer.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes if someone does something to us and something happens to them later on, like have an accident, they just think, don't we feel good about that? That's a discommunication or disconnection. And we talked about that in regard to justice, retributive justice. We like to see sometimes people suffer. In America, there is this thing called capital punishment. Capital punishment means a criminal does something, he's condemned to die in the electric chair, and people park outside the prison before he gets electrocuted or whatever, some sort of poison put in the system. And they tailgate. You know what tailgating is? No one even knows what tailgating is. Tailgating is American pastime where they have a pickup truck and everybody sits in the back of the pickup truck and drinks beer. Of course, you don't have that where you're from. But so they all go outside of the prison house, and as soon as they hear the person is killed, Jai, Hoodie Ball, Gauranga. No, not Gauranga. But they jump in joy. So that's, they deserve to suffer. We want to see someone suffer. And that mood disconnects us. You know, I remember, you know, another story from my own childhood. I always did things wrong, but anyway, so, whenever I aggravated my mother, and something happened to me later, like I tripped, I hurt myself, I cut myself, my mother would say, God is punishing you. Did you ever hear that one before? Doesn't make you want to love God very much, you know. You know, God is Yamaraj, practically speaking. So these are the four T's of discommunication. And try to be aware, if you can, of when you're using them. Because the real purpose of this seminar, the teachings of the seminar, is that we learn to connect with each other. It's not a method of learning how to manipulate your kid and getting your kid to jump through hoops for you. That's animal training, as we talked about in the first seminar. Boy, Maharaj is going to teach me how to discipline my kid, get him to be nice. No. The teachings are to help you connect with each other and connect with yourself and be aware of your needs and be happy and functional, be able to resolve conflicts. Conflicts are good. Conflicts are good. It's a question of how you resolve them. There's always going to be conflicts. Life means conflicts. There's always going to be differences of opinion. People didn't have difference of opinion, we'd be dead. The dead body doesn't have differences of opinion. So, these are the four D's. And then yesterday we started talking about the process. Good. We can move closer. We're talking about the tools or the process to help us connect. There's a whole process. And the first one, the first part of the process we talked about begins with an O. What is it? Huh? Observation. Someone give me an example of an observation. Make an observation right now. Or what do you, of something you're observing right now. Exactly. I am speaking. No, when you were speaking, I wasn't speaking. I'm just teasing. Because when you said you were speaking, it was wrong. I was speaking 2 minutes ago, yeah. That's good. I'm just teasing you. Another observation? Yes.
I was having a conversation with a Prabhu this morning, and I noticed the dry grass at our feet, and I thought of the straw. And you remember my boohoo story yesterday that I got yelled at for tapping the plate in the prasadam room?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw that straw, and immediately it triggered in my mind, that was your lesson. That was your wake up to what you are not. You are not as humble as a blade of grass or straw. That was my observation. And I'm like, oh, wow. I need to go thank that person for giving me a wake-up call.
Wow. That's very good. I wish that every time I saw a dry grass or straw.
It was a big relief to me because it was just like, wow, nobody's the bad guy and nobody's the victim. It was a very good lesson.
Very good.
And I'll never look at dry grass again without...
Very good. So dry grass. Any other observations? Yes. Whoops. She needs a microphone back there.
She would come to work every day 5 minutes late. Like last week, she would come to work about 5 minutes late every day.
All right. Yeah, last week. You got to be careful to use the word always, never. So, yes, that's a genuine observation. Okay, the next step after we observe something dispassionately without giving our own opinion, judgment, or whatever, what is it? What is the next step after that? Feeling. How do you feel? Okay, can someone connect the two right now? Tell me what they observed and how they felt, or what they're observing right now and how they feel right now. Okay. Right now, let's do right now. Who is observing something right now and can tell me how they feel? Yes. What are you observing? Microphone. He'll give you the microphone.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Food is being offered to Krishna and I feel great.
Wow.
I'm thinking about prasadam.
All right, that's very good. They're offering food to Krishna. Wait, give her the microphone, so I'm going to ask her another question. They're offering food to Krishna and she feels great. Why do you feel great? Now we can go to the need. Why do you feel great?
We can have, feeling great that I'm going to have prasadam very soon.
Okay. That's honest and vulnerable. She was honest. I mean, I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Most people would not be that honest. She's really a wonderful devotee. Let's thank her. Because most people would say, well, I'm happy that Krishna's getting pleased. I mean, that's what I would say. But because she was honest, this is a wonderful quality. This is actually something that's a very important part of this course we teach, and is vulnerability, being ready to admit. It's easier for the ladies to admit things like that. The men would never say anything like that. The men just want to show themselves as pure devotees all the time. I know that's a generalization. That's a designation. I know. It's good. So remember this. Please be honest. That's a humble request. Please be honest. Okay. And this is very good. I really appreciate the honesty here. So one of the men, an observation and a feeling about what you observe right now. Any of the men? Something you observe and how you feel about it. Men. Sorry to use that designation, you know, men, women, but we got to be practical. Ladies and gentlemen, or Prabhus and Pravis, or Matajis and Pitajis. So let's hear from one of the Pitajis here. So any men? Yes, sir. A microphone for him, please.
I observed many devotees are laughing and I felt happy.
Okay. That's good. I mean, laughing is just an observation. And you feel happy. Very good. Why do you feel happy? All right, let me help you. It fulfills a need that I have for...
Yeah, I want to be happy. That need is satisfied.
Yeah, it's a need to be joyful.
Yes.
Good. Very good. One more from... Yes. Back to... Oh, look, whoever has close to the microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I observe it's... colder than yesterday, and it really helps. It helping me in listen to the lecture.
It's cold. Yeah, that's an observation. It is colder than yesterday. And how are you feeling about it?
Good, Matt.
And what is the need that's being fulfilled?
Focusing on what is being
connecting.
Connecting.
Very good. Connecting. Very good. That's very good. Okay, and so the final one is called requests. And we mentioned before what a request is. A request is not a demand. You know, we talked about the opposite. A demand is when you demand something. So let me give an example, practical example of this whole thing. Like, I'm observing it's cooler than yesterday. That's an observation. I can't say it is cool because that's all relative. It's cooler than yesterday and I'm feeling relaxed because I have a need for comfort. And I request what? What would I request? Leave the windows open. Okay? Please leave the windows open. So it's all connected like that. Observations, feelings, needs, and requests. And can someone go through that? Give me a practical example of that based upon what you're observing now. Go through this whole thing. Observations, isn't it? Feelings, needs, and requests. Any volunteers? Ladies. Ladies. Yes. All the way back there.
Maharaj, my observation is that you look happy.
Maybe I'm not.
That's my observation.
It's not quite. It's a judgment.
Is it?
Yeah. You. That's your personal judgment.
Okay.
It's not
okay. So I should say that you're smiling.
Okay, that's good.
And I feel good about that because I see you smiling.
Okay. And what need does it fulfill?
And we need that because we want that kind of lecture, you know, where everyone will be smiling just because they'll see you smile.
Yeah, that's for need for joy. And
yes.
What are you requesting?
And I am requesting you to please keep smiling for the moment.
That's pretty good. You got some good ones here. So, one funny thing. There was one funny story that was told by Marshall Rosenberg, who I attended the seminar of, about how the requests have to be really specific. That was a specific request. It's going to be hard to me. Put some rubber bands in the corners of my mouth. So, he gave the example. I don't know if any of you have seen this old TV series involving a dog. The name of the dog was Lassie. And Lassie used to help people, you know, as a dog, you know, American story. So the dog used to go and help people. Let's say if someone's drowning, the dog would go and bring someone to save someone who was drowning, et cetera, like that. So there was a funny cartoon where a person didn't make a specific request. The man was drowning in the river, and he said to the dog, "Lassie, get help." So the dog, not understanding what help meant, went to a psychiatrist. So in other words, when you it's good to be specific when you make a request so people know what you're requesting. Okay, that's requests, observations, feelings, requests. We did that. Let's see, cover that. Very good. Okay. So, actually we're progressing really, really quickly here. Let's see. I think we're going to go ahead to gratitude. There's many different subject matters we can touch upon with. We've learned the basics of emotional, of empathic communication. Well, let's go to anger. That's an interesting one. Everybody's interested in anger. Okay. So, anger comes from a variety of sources. We hear from the Bhagavad Gita that anger comes when we're contemplating sense objects. Everybody's heard about that before. Jayato vishak pumsang sangosteshu pajayate sangat san jayate kama kama krodha pajayate. And you get attached to something. It comes when you don't get what you want, you get angry. But there is a bona fide anger that Krishna has. Like, for example, when Krishna got angry with Grandfather Bhishma, when Bhishma was attacking Arjuna, Krishna was angry with Bhishma. That was productive anger. Now, our anger that we experience is out of a sense of judgment. When we label someone, as Prabhupada said, and we repeated before the other day, that when you give a dog a bad name, you hang him. In other words, we give someone a label and then we get angry. So then we blame the person or the thing, but actually it's our own frustrated desire that is actually the cause of the anger, not the person or the thing. And we usually blame the other person for getting us angry. In other words, we say, well, you made us angry. Now, when we say that you made me angry, that is what? That's a denial of responsibility. So we're talking about these four D's of discommunication. We're denying responsibility and we're labeling the person at the same time. So, can anyone give me an example of bona fide anger, when anger is productive or useful? Something from Shastras. Hanuman burnt Lanka. He was angry at Ravan. Actually, he was also thinking of preparing everything for Lord Ram coming there and capturing or taking Sita back. Another example? Nrisingadev's anger to protect Prahlad Maharaj. What's that? Arjuna's anger. Yes. What's that? Krishna killing the demons. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Chankazi. These are all bona fide uses of anger. So, what do we do when we get angry? There's several things that we have to be careful about. One thing that we have to be careful about is feeling guilty about it. Anger is good. All emotions, all feelings have a use to them. Of course, we hear that lust, anger, and greed are the gateways to hell, right? Isn't that what we hear from the Bhagavad Gita? But to become aware of them, they can be useful because they're indications of needs that are not being met. For example, if you're driving a car and you see the red light come on in your dashboard, you know, it says oil or something like that, that is not the problem. The red light is not the problem. In other words, you don't go behind your dashboard and just pull the wire from the red. It's called an idiot light. Right? You heard of that before? You don't say, yeah, let's take the light off. Because it indicates that you have some problem. Your car is out of oil. Or your car engine is overheating. And if you keep driving your car in such a condition, guess what happens? You ruin the car. So when you get angry, what do you think it indicates? Does anyone know? According to what we've been teaching, yes. An underlying need. What would that underlying need be if I'm driving a car, someone cuts me off, and I get angry at them? Safety. Give me another example of an underlying need when you get angry. Can someone volunteers? Yes. Hunger. You have an underlying need and you're hungry because your blood sugar has gone down. Because that's an excuse. That's denial. Responsibility. I am angry because my blood sugar has gone down. Don't blame me. So, what? A need for empathy. Yeah. Love and caring. And like, when you're thinking of your children, why do you get angry with your children? The need. What's the need? Protection. Concern. Connection. So be aware of when you get angry, what need there is, and develop a strategy for dealing with that need. That's how to deal with anger. It's a very simple process. Okay. Now I'm going to ask some of you to tell me when you got angry last time, of course, hopefully not now. When you got angry last time, how or what need was there? Describe the situation. Be objective. Observations, feelings, needs. And what are you going to do about it? Any volunteers? Has anyone here ever gotten angry? And if you don't volunteer, I'm going to really get angry and not smile anymore. Because why am I getting out? I'm observing that I'm just giving an example. Nobody's raising their hand. I'm feeling angry because I have a need to communicate, a need for connection, a need to feel good about myself. So, and what is my strategy? I'm going to yell at you. No. My strategy, I'll find a better audience. Anyway, so who can go through this anger thing with me? Yes. Describe a time when you got angry. Objectively, what was happening? Of course, the anger we already know about.
This was last Saturday.
Yeah, what happened?
In the kitchen. Mm-hmm. My wife was doing her dishes.
Is she here?
No.
Good. Good, I wanted to make sure.
I did too. That's why I didn't bring her here.
Okay.
I came up to her and asked for something. I don't remember the details, but what I got in return was a tirade of, you're this, you're that.
Can you be more specific?
Oh.
We want an objective statement.
The camera is facing me.
That's not really being objective about it. Observation, a tirade, you know.
So what
did your wife say?
One of the things she said you are useless around the house.
This is definitely vulnerability here. You are useless around the house.
Okay. You don't do anything in the house. So,
do you pay the bills?
I took a deep breath and remembered all the bills that I pay and other things.
So give me a second. Anyway, so all right, she said all those things, and then you felt.
I felt extremely angry.
Extremely angry.
Yes.
All right. So, and what was your need?
To be seen.
To be seen?
Yes. To be seen for who I am.
To be understood for who you are. Appreciated.
That would have been a bonus, but at least...
Oh, my God. I mean, you're all fulfilling my need for fun and laughter today. So that would be a bonus. So let's try to drill down. Understood, or at least
for my contribution to be valued.
You understood for your contribution to the house. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we went through three of them. And what's your strategy?
Don't pay the bills.
Strategy is you left her at home to come to the seminar.
I have studied this nonviolent communication before, and I've been practicing it. So I looked at her and said, looks like you are angry with something, and I am not ready to take it, so I'm going to go away and come back when you're okay.
So, all right, this is very interesting. I'll explain. And how did your wife respond when you said that? Did smoke come out of her ears at that point?
Hopefully I'm not there to see it.
So, anyway, so nonviolent, yeah, let me just go through nonviolent communication and empathic communication. When we're dealing with someone else, we don't want to impose upon them what their emotions are or feelings are. We can guess. Like the mood should be, not that necessarily you have to say it in these particular words, the mood should be, are you, because in that situation, if you said, are you feeling angry, it would have gone over very well. But the mood is like that. You know, so you could express it in such a way, maybe even non-verbally, that understanding her particular emotion, but you don't really want to impose it on her and say, you're really angry. Or you won't even want to say, are you feeling angry? You know, what do you think? What does it look like? That's how she would respond. And then you left. So anyway, your strategy was to leave. And when you, hate to ask you this, but when you came back, what happened? I mean, so interesting. Like real life soap opera.
Yes. She had calmed down when I came back.
Is that an observation?
Yes.
How do you know she calmed down? What did she say? Observation would be just the facts. Because maybe she wasn't calmed down, maybe she was just simmering under the surface. Yeah.
She took responsibility.
What did she say?
What I said was rude. I need not have put it that way.
And she apologized to you?
After some time.
Okay, so with nonviolent communication, I mean, she would be in touch with her needs, and, you know, there can be an apology. Apologies are there in nonviolent because, you know, she could think that I had this need for, you know, order in my house, because sometimes the men are not very orderly and the women are much more orderly than the men. So anyway, whatever reason it is, she would connect with her own feelings and needs. Thank you. That was very good. Does anyone else have any trouble in their married life? This is a great seminar for sannyasis and brahmacharis to attend. Now, can anyone else go with us through something, observations, feelings, needs, and requests? Yeah.
I became angry at my sister.
Why? What did your sister do?
Well, so we were in the car. I wanted to sleep, and then she did not let me sleep.
What did she do to not let you sleep?
She started, like, talking and asking me to play games.
Oh, she started talking and asked you to play games. And yeah. How did you feel? Angry?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what did you need?
I needed some peace.
You needed peace? Good. Good. And what request or what did you ask her to do?
I asked her to stop, and then she started yelling at me.
Okay. So, a request. And an empathic communication request would be something like, I'm feeling sleepy. Would you mind, we can play, you know, an hour from now or 2 hours from now after I rested? Because sometimes if you tell people to stop, they take it as a demand. And when you take it as a demand, see, that's the way we say no to people. That's a whole other subject matter. It's important to learn how to say no without just saying no in their face and getting them upset with you. You say no by explaining your own feelings. When I heard you made this request, then I felt whatever you felt. I felt an anxiety because I'm tired. I have a need for rest. Would you be willing to talk about this in an hour from now? Okay. You did good. Did well. Very nice. Okay, any other ladies have something to share? Yes. This is very interesting.
It's not... Hare Krishna Prabhu. So this is last night. So when I came back from work, I observed that the children are playing and they
Playing, what were they doing?
They were jumping.
Jumping.
And running around.
Okay.
And I also observed that it was getting late, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I felt concerned and angry because I had a need to come here and have them get rested. I will reframe that. I had a need for my children to have a good night rest.
Good. So what was your strategy?
Very bad.
Very bad.
In next 5 minutes, brush your teeth, get into your pajamas, and get into the blanket.
And what did they do?
It was 1 hour more. But they did it. They did. And then I had to keep reminding. Now 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute. But when I retrospectively contemplated when they went to bed, actually, I think I could have told them, because it was in my head that we have a need to take rest because we have to get up early, really early than your usual bedtime. And if you're not rested, you're not going to have a wholesome day tomorrow.
Good, so, good. That's how to present it. Well, I have a need for you to have a, that's very good, to have a nice day of play tomorrow. And our play starts early. Would you be willing to take rest early? Very good. Who else can go through all the four things? Yes.
Is it on? I'm a preschool teacher. I have 15 3- and 4-year-old children. I was coming up with a strategy. They started, there is this thing called manga tile. Anyway, it's a toy. And they started, the boys started throwing them around. So then my strategy was, you can't play with this unless you ask me. And then when they say, can we play with this? I say, you need to agree that you build with them. We're not going to throw them and you need to clean them up. So the reason I was feeling angry is because they had agreed to do that and they did the opposite. So they threw them around, you know, they did after agreeing to that.
So your need for cooperation.
Yeah, and the main need was we need to clean up to take the children outside because there's a certain time we can go outside. So
punctuality.
Yeah, yeah, the schedule of who uses the playground. And so my strategy was I was feeling angry, so I found another teacher to come in the room. I took all the children outside who did not do that and left them inside to finish cleaning that up with the other teacher so that I would, you know, I wouldn't have to, I just needed a break. I work with them 8 hours a day, so.
So your strategy was to take a break because you had a need for a break.
And let somebody else make sure they clean up instead of them. It keep coming from me, so.
Very good. Okay, one more and then we can take general questions about this whole process. One other person want to share with us? Yes, back there. The microphone.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. This was happened on Friday night in the kitchen, okay? So we went for the pot washing, okay? So the pot washing place was not the way it was in Kishore Temple in Chicago. So that made us angry because we are not able to do the way we do the pot washing there. And there we sign up for an hour, we'll peacefully do it and come out, everything in order. So here we found it very difficult. So that triggered the anger, I would say. The need is we expected the same way it was in Kishore Temple.
You expected order?
Yeah, it is in the same
organization.
Way.
You have a need for order and organization.
Yeah.
And your strategy was?
The next day we figure out the strategy. The other person came in. I felt like again pot washing, again the same problem I thought I got in. The other person who assisted, he said, I was telling him it's very small, it's difficult. He said, no, don't worry. This is my favorite thing in Gita Nagari. I used to do it. Then he came, he cleaned up that place where he'll stack all the vessels. And then he removed all the things from that sink and everything. He said, this is the order we should do it. So in that order we did, it was very peaceful. And today I took two more devotees for the pot washing. We followed the same order. It was peaceful.
Ah, good.
Yeah.
So you had a good strategy. Very good. Okay. Questions about this whole process? Does anyone have any questions? Yes, sir.
Maharaj, I'm from a village actually, back in India. I never saw anybody thinking about in these terms like needs and all. But there was a sense of understanding. Even if somebody else had other person, they know where it is coming from, which class. So, when I have to apply this sometimes, you know, in my service and others, I feel, am I manipulating other person? So.
It's a good question. Are you manipulating another person?
Yes.
By utilizing these different understandings. Yes. It can be used for manipulation. I don't suggest using it. The whole purpose is to connect. The purpose, you keep that, it won't work otherwise. You have to keep the purpose in your mind is to connect with the other person, understand the other person. It involves a sort of role playing and sort of taking their position, trying to see things from their perspective. One of the main problems with unresolved conflicts in the world is that we don't see the person from their perspective. And one of the most powerful methods of resolving conflicts is to have two people who have a conflict or a group that has a conflict try to switch sides. Let's say in the husband and the wife, they're having some conflict about something and they switch sides and they understand each other through this process of needs, observations, needs, etc., feelings and needs, requests. Yes, but we don't want to use this as a means to manipulate people. And as you say, in the village, or in many cultures, they automatically do things like this because of a culture. We're just putting a process to it, like making it a definitive process for those who don't automatically do these things. Now one thing that's very interesting that was observed in different studies of different cultures, that when a culture had what's called a process language rather than a language that has, let me explain what a process language is. A process language is a language that doesn't have the verb to be in it. In other words, you only talk about actions. You don't talk about you are this or you are that. So in cultures that don't have those particular words, you know, the verb to be, those cultures have less conflicts. Because they're not calling each other names because they don't have it in their language. You know, language shapes the way we think. Depending on, I mean, for example, I'm bilingual. I can speak easily in Spanish or in English. And I know when I start speaking in Spanish, I think differently. You know, there's more, what do they say, pizzazz. Not that I start doing the rumba or some dance like that, but anyway. You know, I think differently. My whole consciousness becomes transformed. And when I think in English, it's different. Like Prabhupada said about languages, French is the language for love. It's not a good language for sannyasis. And English is a language for businessmen. And German generally, of course, Prabhupada did say German sounds like barking dogs. Don't tell that to a German devotee. But German is very good for philosophy and other things like that. And Sanskrit is very, very precise language for philosophy, for even describing relationships. I mean, Sanskrit's the best language there is. But depending on which language you're using, you actually think in a different way. So if you have a language that doesn't have the verb to be in it, you have no way of pointing your finger at anyone. And therefore, instead of saying, you are an idiot, you'll say to him that you did something that was a mistake, or you didn't fulfill a particular need by doing that. Let's say he was burning, the subject was burnt. Then you'll just describe, the subject was burnt. I wouldn't say that you're a stupid cook. I wouldn't have that language. So, yes, yeah, so sometimes in some villages we're brought up in a certain way. But most of us are brought up in what we call this domination culture. We're brought up to do things because of punishment, threats of punishments or rewards, not threats of course, but promises of rewards. Or we're brought up to obey authority because authority is authority. And we're brought up to that other people have to obey us if we're higher in the totem pole. So it's a matter of our culture. Every culture is different. So you're fortunate. This is in your blood. Empathic communication. I can learn from you. So, yeah, we have some more questions.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. When it comes to certain psychological needs, like, say for example, we were talking about need for appreciation.
Need for what? Appreciation.
Appreciation.
Yeah, appreciation.
That's an example. Like, in that, like, sometimes I feel there is a conflict when it comes to, when we hear the Krishna conscious teachings, so where they say, even like, if we should not appreciate the devotees too much because it will make them proud. And so there are these two views. So how to reconcile? And the second thing is, Maharaj, when someone has a need like that, and also you said yesterday, like when those needs are fulfilled in the devotee community, so there is no need for them to go outside.
Right.
So I was thinking, taking this as an example, what kind of a strategy that they can use? So that, you know, they can, with the devotee community, not like one person or two, that can be satisfied, that need can be satisfied.
All right, you're talking about the need for gratitude right now, right?
Need for appreciation.
Appreciation, gratitude, same thing. Yeah. So, there's two different things. There's gratitude and praise. They're two completely different things. Praise is something using a label. You are good. You're fantastic. Like if someone said to me after the seminar, that was a great seminar, that's praise. But that doesn't really help me at all. It just helps me become proud. Of course, the statement of the Shastras is, he who praises me is my enemy. He who criticizes me is my friend. Because I could use a few more enemies. So how do we reconcile those two things? Because, you know, if you keep praising someone, it goes to their head. You know, after a while, if, you know, in my position, if someone says, you have lotus feet, after a while, I try to touch my own feet. You know, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the best looking sannyasi of them all? And then later on I go for plastic surgery, you know. So, that's praise. It doesn't really connect, or in the worst possible scenario, it makes me proud. You are this. And that's a great danger for someone, in a spiritual movement or in some of the material movement, as we hear, the danam na janam sundarim kavidam ba jagadisha kavaye, that followers and everything like, it's dangerous. Because especially for those who are, let's say someone who's a guru, they get a whole book written about themselves every year. Wouldn't that be nice to have a book about yourself with pictures of yourself every year? Wow. The best birthday present. It's called the Vyas Puja book, in case you haven't figured that out. That's praise. But appreciation means what you did. Observation. Feeling. How I felt about it. And what need it fulfilled. There may be a request, there may not be a request. Like if someone says, you gave the seminar yesterday, that's an observation, and you said you should always smile, or something like that, whatever. And when I heard that, it made me very, you know, I felt very happy, because I have a need for joy. Thank you very much. So that, what that does is it encourages me to do the same thing, to dedicate my life, to learn more about the same thing, to teach more about the same thing. It inspires me in Krishna consciousness. And that's the sort of appreciation. And not only, you know, for someone like me who gives a seminar or whatever, it, you know, the parents and the children too. For example, what I just did with the lady who revealed her mind with herself, and said that she was very happy because there was going to be a nice prasadam later on. What did I do? I appreciated her for her honesty. And it's a genuine appreciation. It's not manipulative. I was just overwhelmed by my own emotions. Okay. I was overwhelmed, joyful, because I have a need for honesty and openness and displaying what I'm teaching. And I appreciated that. And we all do that. We clapped our hands when someone said something that was very much from the heart. And that encouraged people to utilize the process of connecting through the heart. And that's what we're trying to do in the seminar, that sort of appreciation. So that's how you reconcile. Don't give basic praise to someone, or try not to, because it really doesn't help them or connect to them or enthuse them. But try to understand what they did, observations, how you felt, and what need. Okay? Yes. Another question, yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is a very basic question, but and quick. Just, we're trying not to demand to fulfill our needs.
Yeah.
So if the person says, no, I can't, or I don't want to, then what do we do with that need?
Yell at them. What do? You figure out another strategy. We talked about that. There's an infinite number of strategies to fulfill needs. Once you're aware of the need, let's say I have a need for recreation, or let's say I have a need for exercise. I exercise every day. But there's no gym nearby. There's no swimming pool here. Maybe there is. But anyway, so what do? I have to figure out another way to exercise. You know, if you're fixed on a particular strategy, that's the only strategy. Or let's say someone is married and they have a need for eating, and their wife is cooking, and the wife doesn't want to cook. And he demands, you have to cook. You're my wife, you have to cook. It's your duty, you have to cook. Or she won't want to do it. Then instead he should find another way to satisfy his need. He should learn how to cook himself, the rascal. Sorry. Not supposed to do that. Right? So when we focus our needs, fulfilling our needs on a particular individual, it becomes a demand. You're supposed to, you're the wife, you're the husband, you're the child, you're the mother. You know, it's funny, actually. Now, my mother's 91. I always use her as examples in my course, anyway. Forgive me. She's 91, and sometimes I want her to do something for me, and she says, "You're an adult." And I say to her, "But you're my mommy." And she does it, you know. Very manipulative. You got to know when to be manipulative in this world. So the point is, when you focus that need, that person is your need-fulfilling genie. You know, rub the Aladdin's lamp and out it comes, you know, "Your wish is my desire." You know, I was just talking to someone, what was it, last night, and he said, you know, I'm really not happy with my wife. I said, "Why?" "Because she listens to her mother more than me." Sound familiar? So I think you just really can't focus on your wife as your genie, you know, just like doing everything for you. It's a relationship that's really not conducive to, you know, loving relationships, connection and everything like that. Nor are we responsible for fulfilling someone else's need. That's also, we don't want to make a demand on ourselves. You know, that, oh, it's, and then we feel guilty and resentful. After a while, you get resentful. There's actually different stages you can go through. First stage is you just feel guilty. Then after, you just resentful, obnoxious stage. Isn't it? And then the third stage, that's it. I'm not doing it anymore. Finished. And then hopefully you go to empathic communication. And you learn how to fulfill your own need and suggest to the other person how she or he can fulfill their needs. That you are not responsible. I mean, let's say you're not responsible for fulfilling my needs. I'm not responsible for fulfilling your needs. And if you don't like it, that's not my problem. It's your problem. I mean, like, there's this whole thing in society about reputation, especially in Indian society, reputation is so important. What do people think of me? Right? What if everybody talks? They all talk. But what if everybody does? But who cares? I'm responsible for fulfilling my needs. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt. You ever hear that before? So it's an independent, it's a free, you act freedom at that point. When you feel like that, that I'm responsible for fulfilling my own needs, you're responsible for fulfilling your needs, and I'll help you joyfully fulfill your needs. Out of a sense of contribution, out of a sense of joy, it makes life really blissful. Like for example, there was one devotee here who wasn't getting the prasadam that she wanted. You know, because all of us, I should not use the things that are like deep fried and sugary. She wants to live another few years. So, sorry about that. You have to attend my health seminar, you know. Just go on the internet, YouTube, look it up. Stop Killing the Devotees is the name of the seminar. Seriously, look it up on YouTube. Stop Killing the Devotees. Because I have a need to help devotees in their health. I mean, that has nothing to do with this seminar. So she wasn't getting the prasadam that she needed, so, for her health. So when I came this morning, I came yesterday, I brought some things from the place I'm staying, because as a sannyasi, I always get what I need. We can demand. It's fantastic. The point is, I felt really good about contributing to someone else's need without being asked. Isn't it? I mean, it's really, you get such a high, you know, you feel really high, really nice to contribute to someone else's needs when they don't even ask. or they're not making a demand on you. It's really wonderful. It's a really wonderful feeling. If you want to feel good, help someone else. And especially the best way to help others is to help them in Krishna consciousness, become Krishna conscious. Because that's the basic overlying, you know, highest need that all of us have. You feel really good. I mean, I remember going on book distribution. Here's an advertisement from Vaishashiga. Right? I remember going on book distribution, and because I was just helping people all day long, it's the best I've ever felt in my life. Has anyone ever done book distribution here? Raise your hand. And you're just going out. You're not keeping any of the money for yourself. Hopefully. You know, I mean, that's how I was trained. Nowadays, you know, I heard something. The Lord said, yeah, well, you got to keep it proportionate, proportionate. No, you're just doing something to help people, fulfilling their need. Wow. Or you're feeding people. Like, you're seeing people hungry and you're giving them prasadam. And you haven't been asked or demanded to do that. It's the highest feeling you can get. Okay, any other questions? We got 5 more minutes. Yes.
Is there a difference between needs and values?
That's a very interesting question. They are pretty much synonymous, although there can be a little bit of difference between the two. Values are things that are important to you. You know, I have a value for honesty. That is one of my values. Honesty, but that's also a need. So we conflate the two terms. Generally, I conflate the two terms. And in nonviolent communication, generally we conflate these two terms, needs and values, although there is a little bit of difference. You know, you can express it differently. Like, I have a need for fun. My value is to have life that is fun. You know, you're just expressing it in a little different wording, but it's basically the same thing. Good question. That's brought up actually in nonviolent communication books. Yes. All right, Mike, you got a mic.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So we talked about needs, but need not necessarily be positive all the time. What about we have a negative need?
What is a negative need?
Give you an example. People might have need for attention. They just always want attention. Or
is that negative? That's what we're taught in our society. You just want attention. Like you say, a kid. Here's a little kid.
Yeah.
And you say, he's just looking for attention. Yeah, well, what's wrong with that? He wants love. That's not... We need attention. We need people to connect to us. I mean, put it in different ways. We need people to connect to us, people to be aware. I mean, what happens... Let me use my mother again. Sorry. That. You know, we're all products of our childhood. So one of the ways my mother punished me was that she gave me what's called the cold shoulder. That was the most... I prefer to be beaten. She would make believe that I didn't exist. Any mother ever do that to their child? You do that. Okay. So I could say something that's da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, like, I didn't exist. I was so frustrating because I had a need for recognition, which is, you know, part of attention. I need someone to... Connection with people. No man or woman is an island. So that's important. We need someone to be aware of us, someone to care for us, don't we? I mean, what if the whole world, there was no one who cared for you at all? You must have someone who cares for you, right? Who? No one. Your parents. Are you happy about that? No? Yes. Can you say that louder? You know,
I'm very happy about it, that they care for me all the time.
And because you have a need for?
Love.
Love and, you know, attention. Inattention. Yeah. Inattention is not a need. So, yeah, there are no negative needs. All needs are good. And feelings are all good because they indicate needs. Be aware. That's one thing that you can take from this seminar, especially dealing with anger, which some people think is a negative. But it indicates a need, an unmet need. Remember that. Every feeling is good because it indicates a need, met or unmet. I mean, if you have a need that's met, like a need for joy, a need for humor, then that feeling of being happy is good. You know, whether it's a positive, negative, whatever. I mean, there's no negative, of course. But all needs are good, all feelings are good. How about that? Don't be embarrassed about feelings. But judgments, be aware of too. Judgments of the mind thing. That I feel that you're a rascal. That's a judgment. We talked about that yesterday. That, be aware of. Being aware of your judgments is good. Judgments are good in that respect because they help you become aware of your basic feelings. But be able to distinguish between judgments and feelings. You know, anytime you use the word that, I feel that, usually indicates a judgment. Does that make sense? So needs, just go for it. Fulfill your needs. Peace and love. One more question before we break.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Yeah.
So how to resolve conflicts when two people, let's say, have needs, but they are opposing needs. Like a simple example would be two people in the room, one feels cold, another wants fresh air, and they can't decide they should keep the window open or closed. Like,
just send the other person outside. You know, you can't always stay in the same room. Or put a fan on the other person. There's always a way. There's always a way. Just think, use your imagination. Unresolved conflicts are a failure of the imagination. To use the imagination. And you don't have to do, remember we started with this, you don't have to do anything. You choose to do things. Don't feel you're forced to do something. Now, even things that are, let's say, your duty, rephrase them as, I choose to do this for a specific purpose. But as far as the conflicts, then work it out. Go to a different situation. Put a fan. Give the person a suit, cooling suit. I don't know how you're going to do it. But there's always a way to do it. We have to take a break now for about 15, 20 minutes, and we'll be back. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.